follow us on our social network feed, Twitter, Facebook. Okay. I've got my own as well, Hagman PI on Twitter, and I think just look Douglas Hagman up on Twitter. And of course, Facebook, I've got my own. And then the show has Hagman Report as well, and Hagman Report on Twitter. And of course, HagmanReport.com, that's the content. And then just for the show is Hagman and Hagman.com. It's real simple. It really is. And from Hagman and Hagman.com, you can choose your listening venue. There's YouTube Live, or YouTube, archives as well. And of course, BTR, Blog Talk Radio, as well as Global Star Radio Network. And that's the place to be in the independent media, is Global Star Radio Network. Great, just a great network to be a part of. Before we get to our guest, which, folks, you're going to love Joseph Meyer. You heard him on the 13th of October. But before we get to him, I do want to mention that T.C. Joseph's This Generation series of novels has been just selling like hotcakes. Is that a phrase that people still use? I don't know. This T.C. Joseph has written a very thrilling series of novels. It takes us into the lives of three families in a world where conspiracy theories and Bible prophecies collide. And his novels move through recent history to the events that are they're happening today. His witty style and fascinating characters provide a great read. And not only will you love these books, but they can be used, and I've used them, as a tool to awaken friends and family members to the perilous times that we face and in which we live. Brilliant, glowing reviews from Blue Ink and Kirkus. You know, you get a good review there, you've got a great book on your hands. And Kirkus writes that readers of end time fiction will be hard pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this, meaning This Generation series on Amazon. Book one is Precipice, book two is Pentecost, and book three is Penance. And I gotta tell you, they're all great. Penance, it really drives it home. Look up T.C. Joseph's This Generation series on Amazon today. Now, Joseph Meyer, folks, in case you don't remember, or in case you haven't heard of that name, and I can't believe you haven't, everyone, I believe, in the financial world has. He's the president of Meyer & Associates. And you know, folks, in today's volatile investment community, we all need to be very confident of obtaining the most accurate information possible, because we all have to make very critical financial decisions for ourselves, for our family. I don't care whether you've got $2 or $2 million. You've got to be careful with your money. And this valuable information is found by locating the most experienced individuals on the planet. And Joseph E. Meyer is, in fact, one. His website, folks, and his website is an amazing website, straightmoneyanalysis.com. He's got a fee-based newsletter at straightmoneyanalysis.com. But he's got his finger on the pulse of our economy. And the last time, again, we had him on was before the elections, October 13th. And we talked a lot about the economy. And I think in the microcosmic sense, I think you'll find that he was, I was going to use a phrase I can't use, very accurate, with respect to what was going to happen in the short term. We have found just recently the talk of the Fed rate hike and what's taking place with that. So anyway, Joseph Meyer, welcome to the Hagman Report.
Good evening, Doug. Thank you and the Hagman Report for having me as your guest this evening. Always a pleasure to visit with your listening audience. Happy holidays, Doug, to you and your listeners all over the world.
Well, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and to everyone, a safe and prosperous New Year. Mr. Meyer, I was talking to Dave Hodges earlier today, and
yes.
And he said to me, he said, I really want to have Mr. Meyer back on, but he said, can you ask him a question for me? And I said, sure. Okay. He wanted to know about the Fed rate hike. Is that kind of a, is that a backdoor slap against Trump, or what's going on with that? And you can answer that at any time you're comfortable within this time period that you've got, if you want to answer it later,
okay,
or in the context of whatever. But I said, Dave, I'll ask him that for you. Dave at thecommonsenseshow.com, folks, in case you didn't make that connection. But anyway, so that, and where should we start today looking at the landscape of our economy?
Well, you know, the last time you and I were able to visit, Doug, things weren't going too good for Donald Trump, and you asked me, you know, what I thought would happen with the election, and I believed he would regain his footing as he was able to, and he would go on to win the election. We also talked that night, as you remember, as to where the markets would be headed into the election and where we would go thereafter. And I told you, I believe that night, that I thought we had the possibility to go to 20,000 in the Dow and approximately 2350 in the S&P 500.
You did?
We're about 100 points away from 2350 in the S&P, but we're within 25 or 30 points of Dow 20,000.
And I remember that, and I played back the interview. You know, I played back the interview today because
did
I
want.
I did, because I seriously, in for show prep, I thought I'm going to listen to what was said. And folks, yeah, it was. I think, I don't know, at the 26 or 24 minute mark or something. It was in there. But anyway, yeah, which surprised me. Not your accuracy, but just the whole thing just kind of surprises me, because I, you know what, the more I think I know, the less I know. The more I know, I don't know. If that makes
sense.
Well,
you know, I initially went on the record in my 14th appearance with Coast to Coast AM and George Noory July 21st. And I made that prediction of 20,000 in the Dow and 2350 that night in the show with George. So, believe it or not, it's 5 months to the day that we did that show with George and we made that prediction of 20,000, Doug.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up. I was on during the news segment with George Noory last night on Coast to Coast AM, and in casual conversation, bottom line, hello from George to you. So, anyway, there you go.
Well, thank you so much, Doug. We appreciate it. George is a great guy and a great host, as you are as well.
Well, thanks. Yeah. But yeah, your prediction or your assessment analysis that showed that, or that indicated that stock market or the numbers. But is that inflated? Is that just, that's not right, is it? I mean, it's
I felt very strongly that we had a momentum liquidity driven rally underway, and I felt strongly that we'd get a good voter turnout as we did, and that Trump would win the election. And that initially the markets would respond, and they did by going down and then reversing almost immediately, and the rally commenced, and it's still ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Off of the lows that we saw election night, I guess we're up around 2,500 points in the Dow, but I think once we close over 20,000, we get a little bit of a correction, Doug. I think it's limited to maybe 2-3%, 400-600 points, taking us down to maybe 19,450 in the Dow, and then I think we turn around and we rally to probably the low to mid 21,000 level in the Dow before we see a more meaningful correction, probably in the first half of 2017.
All right, so the first half of 2017 is going to be kind of like it's a party now.
Yes, it is.
Okay, and so you can, if you know what you're doing, I suppose, and I certainly don't, but I guess you could invest in the stock market, make a few quick bucks and get out before the bottom, or, you know, before trouble starts. But, okay.
Well, you know, markets have four phases to them, Doug, and I don't know if we touched upon this in the last show that we were able to do together, but the four phases of a bull market, and they're pretty pronounced. I'd like to share them quickly with your listening audience. They're born on pessimism, they grow on skepticism, they mature on optimism, and then they die on euphoria.
I said you never
heard that before.
no, and I was, and actually I'm sitting here, I was getting ready to write that down. I can't even do that. Okay.
You want me to give them to you one more time?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so they're born on
pessimism.
Right. Okay.
They grow on skepticism.
All right.
They mature on optimism.
Uh-huh.
And then they die on euphoria.
Wow. That last one sounds almost counterintuitive, but I guess Yeah, okay. I can see that. All right. They die on euphoria. It kind of like drinking too much or... I get you. Okay.
But the markets are going up basically since the election, Doug, for three primary reasons. Number one, the proposed tax cuts. Number two, less regulation in the financial markets. And more importantly, in the key industries as we move forward. And lastly, and more importantly, a spending boom, money going to be spent on rebuilding the infrastructure of America. Those, in my humble opinion, are the three market reasons why this stock market wants to go higher.
Mm, okay. Well, all right. But I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that the markets are going higher. But to me, there's nothing supporting any of this except... irrational optimism, I guess, right?
You're absolutely right. There's three things that are of a concern that, again, I'll share quickly with your listening audience. What we're witnessing here has only happened twice in the last 50 years, and I'll explain when I say that what I mean. It happened in 1973, and it happened again in 1980. And those three things are: we've got a strong dollar, rising interest rates, and rising commodity prices. And we've only seen that twice in the last 50 years. But coincidentally, both times we saw those three things, it led to a major economic recession at some point down the road. So I think that's ahead of us at some point, but I don't want to lose sight of that.
All right.
You know, we've got the dollar trading at a 14-year high. You got commodity prices in general up about 25% in the last year. You've got oil is one of the key commodities up 40% in the last year. So there's a lot of things going on, as you've alluded to, beneath the surface of what's certainly happening in these markets.
Okay, what about gold and silver? Is this the proper time to ask about that? I mean, in these times, why? I mean, everything's being managed, I guess, the prices or the values.
Well, you know, coincidentally, when you talk about the other world markets, and I'll speak to gold and silver momentarily, okay. The U.S. market, by going up the way it is not being confirmed with what's happening in the other markets globally around the world. If you look at China, it's currently 47% below its 2007 high. Japan is 51% below its 1989 high. Italy, 60% below its 2007 high. And the U.S. market currently is now up 69% above its 1999 high. So what we're witnessing here in the U.S., Doug, is not being confirmed globally. Again, I think that's a glaring warning that we could be headed for some trouble at some point down the road. Talking about gold and silver, I think it's important that people own it. I think we're seeing the equity markets making a long-term, very important top. And I think conversely, in the precious metals, both gold and silver, they're making a very important long-term bottom.
Right.
So I think money should be taken out of the stock and bond markets, and I think it should find a home, certainly in the precious metals, because quite honestly, a year from now, I'm looking at substantially higher prices in both gold and silver.
You know, if we can talk about that for a moment, because I've heard this from people who bought gold or bought silver, for example, when it was in the 30s, high, and you know, it was high.
Okay.
I don't know where it stopped out. And they're angry. They're saying, oh my goodness, we bought this and we got ripped off. Well, no, you didn't. What would you say? I mean, because in fact, I got an email.
Well, you still own the metal. You haven't lost the metal. It's just the metal isn't worth currently what you paid for it. But that doesn't mean by any stretch of the imagination that it's a bad investment and it won't continue to go on and make you money.
Right, exactly. And I didn't quite, I mean, I didn't answer that email, but I thought it was just an insane position, because you're exactly right. You still own whatever it is, gold, silver, whatever you buy, you still own
it. It's a storage of value. It's a hedge against inflation. It's certainly something that should be part of every portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've got to certainly look at the bigger picture. And, you know, I've said many times in my career, I'm 50 years on Wall Street, patience is the rarest commodity on the street of dreams, Doug. It really is.
I love that. Yeah,
you never heard that one?
No. Hey, I'm gonna have to open up a book of Meyerisms.
Meyer sayings.
That's right. There you go. Yeah. Okay. And you're correct because and is it not the dollar, the value of the dollar that's fluctuating, not of the precious metal? Is that
that's exactly right.
Okay. Yeah. So if anything, you've either got the paper money to blame or to thank at this point. But we're seeing this economic optimism, a very high level of economic optimism right now.
We're facing major problems in the economy, and we're not going to turn it around overnight. I know a lot of people want to believe it's smooth sailing as we move ahead, and, you know, I'm optimistic in the long term, but I think in the short term we're going to face our problems. The real U.S. economy is facing widespread poverty, high unemployment, underemployment, downward mobility, and crushing national debt and massive consumer debt. These problems are not going to be erased overnight. I mean, we're going to face some tough times before we really start down the road and certainly turn this thing around in the long term. That's the way I see it, Doug.
Okay. Is, and forgive me for asking any improperly worded or even timed questions, but that's just merely due to my inexperience with matters of economy. But having said that, is what we're seeing right now is the market response that you referred to earlier. And I tend to think this because of what you said in the October interview, is what we're seeing right now, the market response to, is this to a Trump election? And
yes.
Is it? Okay, that's what I thought. And is it overly optimistic? And I think you've already answered that. So.
Well, I think when you look at the markets, I believe they're extremely overvalued. They're widely overextended. And we're starting to see now, as I spoke to earlier, they're becoming rampantly euphoric. Does that mean we go down today or tomorrow? No, but it does mean we're reaching a turning point where I think we will see lower prices. The key, I think, is we continue to move higher, and I believe we will into certainly year-end and then into early 2017. Take some money off the table, raise some cash, you know, cash in some of your profits and get to the sidelines. Everybody's trying to get the last $10 out of this rally, and you can always come back in the market. Cash is a position in itself in the market. I think you've got to wait for a better buying opportunity, and it's just not here right now.
Exactly.
Too many people are chasing this rally, and as you can see, this market is running into selling every time we try to approach the 20,000 level in the Dow. So I think we've got people cashing in, taking money out of this market, raising some cash, and waiting for lower prices. That's the way I see it.
Okay. All right. What else do we need to be looking at, or what should we be looking at?
Oil is telling a story. I think we're going to see significantly higher oil prices. Again, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. And I think in the show we did October 13th, we talked about oil having possibly put in place a long-term bottom in that $37.50, $38 a barrel area, which I believed had been a major low. And I think as we get into 2017, we see significantly higher crude oil gasoline prices, and I've got a target for crude oil in 2017 right around $70 a barrel, Doug. Right now it's $52.50.
Okay. In a move like that will have a pretty significant impact on a lot of things,
Yes, it will.
I mean, that's no small matter, I guess is what I'm trying to say. A move of that.
Well, I think we've got two things here. We've got rising oil prices and rising interest rates. And, you know, interest rates have been down for many, many years and are starting to move up. And the question is, how quickly do they go up? And more importantly, how high do they go up before they start to flatten out? You know, the Fed recently raised rates. They're talking of possibly two more rate increases in 2017. I hope they don't do it. This economy is very fragile. It's very leveraged. There's a tremendous amount of corporate and consumer debt that just at this point cannot handle higher interest rates. So I think the Fed at this point is walking a tightrope. You know, everybody is moving out of currencies around the world into the dollar, and This is very similarly to what we had witnessed when Ronald Reagan won the election in 1980. Very coincidentally, I think you'll get a kick out of this statistic. After Ronald Reagan won the election in 1980, the market went up about 10% before we entered a pretty serious recession and bear market. This rally here with the election of Donald Trump as president has gone up almost about the same amount as the rally we witnessed with Ronald Reagan. You know, could there be a similarity here with the market turning down and we enter a recession as we get into, you know, the early midpoint of 2017? I can't rule it out.
All right. Significant information. Okay. All right. And folks, we're talking with Joseph Meyer. His website, straightmoneyanalysis.com. That's straightmoneyanalysis.com. And he's got a newsletter. That's an information-packed newsletter. It's important if you really want to understand what's taking place. If it's available for purchase via PayPal or check money order.
We want to make a special offer to your listening audience out of respect to you and what you do on the Hagman Report. Anyone who becomes a subscriber to Straight Money Analysis tonight, you'll get a full one-year subscription, normally $259.95. At the six-month subscription price of $149.95, you'll save $110 on the one-year subscription. And I'll also include as a bonus to your listening audience the March, June, and September, December 2016 issues of Straight Money Analysis, and we'll start your one-year subscription from the next issue of the newsletter. So they get four newsletters immediately, and then four newsletters on their subscription, Doug.
That's
a bonus to the Hagman Report listening audience.
Folks, you heard that, subscribe tonight, and you get four issues, and you start the your subscription with the next issue coming out, for $149.95, which is a 6 month a year's worth of newsletters at a 6 month price. It's half off. I mean, plus you get a whole lot of background information. That's straightmoneyanalysis.com. Again, Joseph Meyer, but make sure you let him know you heard it on the Hagman Report.
You know the quality and content of this newsletter better than anyone, Doug. It's a tremendous value.
Yeah, and it's real. It's stuff that I can understand. And if I can understand, because I was never good in economics and in school and classes and such, and but if I can understand what you write and how, and I can understand the context, you know, and that's important, the context of things, and you make it easy, you make it simple, so you don't have to be an economics professor to understand this. And so anyway,
well, we tell you what you need to know, we tell you why you need to know it, and lastly and very importantly, we tell you what you can and should be doing about it.
Exactly. And you know, not only is it a good buy, it's a tremendous buy, and it's a small price to pay for your portfolio and your life. You got to think of it, as wealth protection and growth and such. So it's great. And you can read, folks, read the testimonials. The testimonials speak for themselves at straightmoneyanalysis.com. We got about 2 minutes before the bottom of the hour break here.
Okay.
What do you want to cover in 2 minutes that we can't cover in 2 minutes? What would you like to?
Well, you know, there's a tremendous amount of money in the retirement assets of people. There's $23 trillion in total retirement assets. And of that $23 trillion, Doug, $7.3 trillion are in IRA accounts. And I think people at this point, as we're closing out the year, have to reassess how much risk am I really taking in these markets with my hard-earned retirement dollars. And Straight Money Analysis clarifies exactly what's happening in these markets, why it's happening, and what we can and should be doing about it. And we give you insight into the similarities and the differences between prior economic cycles and prior markets. And we give you information, quite frankly, nobody wants you to have. And I do the research, and we write from the standpoint of the markets and certainly the economic cycles I've been part of in my 50-year career on Wall Street. And we talk about the similarities and the differences, and we tell you what's ahead and how to take advantage of the opportunities we see in these markets. That's what Straight Money Analysis is all about.
Exactly. And it's done very well, put together very well. And you've been, I'm looking at your bona fides here, and it's amazing. You have seen so much over the course of the last half century. And
we've seen the good times, we've seen the bad times, and we've learned from every period we've been a part of.
Yeah, exactly. And I was I'm impressed with the fact that you're an industry arbitrator with the National Association of Security.
Well, I've been an arbitrator with FINRA now 22 years.
Yeah.
You know, I was an arbitrator with the old NASD, and then I joined the NNYSE a year later, and then it became FINRA, and I served as an industry arbitrator, public arbitrator, panel chairman, and I've had mediator status now over 20 years. I mediate security law cases with FINRA prior to them going to trial.
That's amazing. I mean, to me, that just speaks volumes right there. Mr. Meyer, just hold on as we approach the break here. We've got about 3 minutes. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report. Go to HagmanReport.com. And there, again, folks, subscribe to our YouTube channel. As you're watching this, just go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Tell a friend about this program. Have your friends and your family subscribe to this channel as well. Follow us on our social networking. And don't forget, Mr. Myers, our guest here, what a great offer. Go to straightmoneyanalysis.com and mention the Hagman Report, and you'll get a year's subscription of the newsletter, fee-based newsletter, for $149.95. That's half off, and that includes four previous issues and some extra time there as your subscription will start with the next month. Stay right where you're at, folks. Going to be right back with Joseph Meyer. Edition of the Hagman and Hagman Reporter. Our special guest is Joseph Meyer, straightmoneyanalysis.com. That's straightmoneyanalysis.com. That's his website. Very special offer of his newsletter. If you purchase it tonight, it's half off. It's 6 month subscription, a year subscription for 6 month fee of 6 months. It's 1 year, originally $259.95. generously being offered for $149.95 plus. You'll get the last four quarterly newsletters, and your subscription won't start until the next one. So you're getting a great deal there. Just mention Hagman Report when you do that. That way he knows that where it's coming from, and he can offer you that discount. It's exclusive to Hagman listeners. What a great deal that is. And you know, Christmas, that'd make a good Christmas gift for that man, woman in your life who, you know, is looking to understand the economy better, or perhaps investing or whatever, managing the finances. Definitely a good deal. Now, of course, before we get back to Mr. Meyer, I our grandparents had it right. When you think about it, our elders had it right. Think about this. Think about how things were back in the early 20th century, late 19th century. The fact that you could walk into a store, this one store where they would have homesteading supplies, and there seemed to be at that time, people who knew what they were doing with respect to the various different skills. Imagine a shelf full of full of items that home remedy kind of stuff. Just think back to those simpler times. Well, Trading Post in the Woods is like that, except it's a virtual store, tradingpostinthewoods.com. I would urge everyone to visit tradingpostinthewoods.com, because this is an American owned and operated store. It's operated by a team of crisis first responders, and together they've responded to over 18 major disasters. And they have 27 years of combined experience. The owners have learned firsthand about destruction and about chaos and about preparedness and the reality after the storm, because there's a level of survival. You got to get through that, right? So the training person in the woods, they've got a passion to help those who want to be prepared for life in general in the event of a disaster. They specialize in comprehensive natural survival remedy kits. This is where we shop for a variety of our needs, and to make sure that our preps are kind of filled, you know, polished off, all right, with a different range of items. You can spend a long time there reading and researching. That's TradingPostInTheWoods.com. 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 Now, again, as I said, our guest is Joseph Meyer. Mr. Meyer, I've a couple of things here that I'd like to ask you about, and then, or you take us wherever you want to go, but a couple of things here. We've got what seems to be, and I mentioned this earlier, that the Fed is suggesting perhaps rates might rise a few times, maybe upwards of three times this coming year. And then we've got the euro, which is heading for apparent parity with the U.S. dollar.
Yes, it is.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not even sure what that means, except I think I should ask you about it. So,
well, the euro's lost one-third of its value, and I think when you talk about interest rates globally, we've got five countries around the world with negative interest rates, Doug, as you know, Japan, Denmark, Sweden, Switzerland, and the ECB with 18 nations that use the euro. So we're seeing higher interest rates here in the U.S. The question again is how high do they go before they turn back down? And if we enter a recession, do we see QE? And if we do, how much? I think the bigger question moving forward is how we're going to fund the $1 trillion that President Trump wants to use to rebuild the infrastructure of America.
That's a good question. And how are we going to do that? Because talk is expensive. Not cheap, but expensive. I mean, if he's going to commit $1 trillion, where's that money going to come from?
Well, I think when you talk about cutting taxes, you know, it sounds good on the surface, but when you look at the tax base, more importantly, nationally, it's been shrinking for quite some time. You know, we should have rebuilt, and I'm sure you'll agree, Doug, the infrastructure of America going back 20 years ago. We were in a much better physical position monetarily to rebuild the infrastructure of America 20 years ago. We didn't do it. We spent literally $6 trillion on the wars in the Middle East. We could have rebuilt the infrastructure of America three times over. And now we've got a $20 trillion national debt, and most people look at it and say, well, it's just a number. But if you go back and you study history, which I'm a historian, as you know, on all these markets, we didn't surpass the first $1 trillion in national debt until Ronald Reagan became president in 1980.
Yes.
To put it in even more perspective, when President Kennedy was president, the national debt was $255 billion. So we spent a lot of money in Vietnam, we spent a lot of money with wars in the Middle East, and we've run up $1 trillion deficits over the last 8 years, and we've got a national debt at some point it's going to become unserviceable, and the question is going to be, what damage to the economy will these rising interest rates finally do? I mean, no one seems to have the answer to that question, and I certainly do not, but I think that's one of the things we should be focusing on as we move forward. How are we going to pay to rebuild the infrastructure of America? I don't have that answer.
Well, and you know, we do need to rebuild it, of course. I often visit, I'm familiar with infrastructure reports, reportcard.org, I think it is. It's a company that, or a group that, assesses our infrastructure here in the United States every 4 years. And we've got right now a D plus, grade.
It's bad.
Yeah, it's horrible. And the estimated investment needed by 2020, according to their books, Trump says $1 trillion. Well, they're saying no. It's $3.6 trillion, and it's broken down into various things like energy and schools and public transport and such. But so and how many could how many have already forgotten the bridge collapses? What was it, I-35 or, I don't know, it was a couple of years ago.
Well, you know, people lose sight of the fact that President Eisenhower built the highway system in America in the 1950s.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, the last major construction project we had on a national scale was to implement the highway system under President Eisenhower in the 1950s. There isn't a road you get on that's not in bad shape with potholes you could bury a body in.
I'm going to tell you, I've driven through New York City, and it's like driving a vehicle over a washboard on some of the roads. I mean, I was astounded. But you know, you look around and you see workers, these street workers out there, but they don't seem to be doing anything permanent. They're all like just throwing cold patch in a hole somewhere. It's nothing permanent. So yes, but back to your question. Can Trump fix our infrastructure? And if so, and again, I got to ask.
How do we pay for it?
How do we pay for it? Right. So who's going to pay for it? And can he pull a rabbit out of his hat in this case? Maybe find money elsewhere. But it's got to be done, or else we're going to continue to crumble.
Well, I don't think there's any question, Doug. We have a lot of waste in the federal government. You know, how much waste? I'm not an expert in that area, but I would believe that it's probably formidable. Can we cut a lot of that waste, you know, out of these bloated federal agencies? I think we can, and I think we could put that money towards what we need to rebuild the infrastructure of America. We're not going to turn this around overnight. Rebuilding the infrastructure of America is probably going to take, I think, 5 to 7 years at a minimum. It's just not going to happen as quickly as we'd like it to.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Somebody asked me to ask you, and they didn't send an email here. What about are you in favor of privatizing, like certain roads and, stuff within the United States? Are you in favor of privatization as a potential remedy for the, repair? Or is that something that you would prefer not to see happen?
Well, I think it's certainly something I would, not like to see happen in my lifetime. You know, I don't think it's the right direction that we want to see this country going, but then again, it's one man's opinion.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I'm with you on that. I think that what's ours is ours, and it should be owned collectively in America, especially with roads, bridges, tunnels, and all that. So I'm there with you. But yes, it's a problem indeed when we start talking about the how this is going to happen. All right. What are we missing here? What else are we missing that we haven't talked about that we need to talk about?
Well, I think when you talk about the potential surprises for the U.S. economy, and I think we talked about the positives moving forward, but I think we should talk about what can go wrong.
Okay.
I think there's probably 4 or 5 things, honestly, Doug, that can go wrong. I'll run them by quickly with your listening audience and let me know what you think. I think, number one, we get another banking crisis coming out of Europe. The European banking index now back to levels we witnessed going back to 2009, Italy, the latest casualty. Yep. Sovereign debt problems surfacing once again, whether it would be Greece, Portugal, Spain, or Italy. And again, we've seen recently the problems with the Italian banks. Number three, the European Union, who might want to leave the EU next? Could Britain be the first of other nations to leave the EU? I think the answer is yes. The question is who? Number four, a major terrorist attack either in Europe or the U.S. We're already seeing terrorist attacks. They're not major at this point, but I don't think we could rule out one of them happening. Number five, and we spoke about this earlier, countries with negative interest rates will more follow, namely Canada, Norway, Israel, Czech Republic, or Great Britain. Again, I don't think we can rule out anything as the central banks of the world are all scrambling, trying to hold these very fragile economies together. Those are the things that I think could potentially go wrong.
Okay. All right. Now, as you were stating those, naming those, delineating those issues, someone asked me to ask you about Christine Lagarde and the IMF. What are we seeing there? And is that relevant to anything, or is that just a a limited issue, an issue that really does not concern.
Well, I think it's systemic of a bigger problem and a bigger picture of what's truly going on throughout the European Union and what's happening in these European global economies. I don't think it's a good sign, and I'm not saying I know everything that's involved, certainly as we speak to Ms. Lagarde, but from what I have been able to read and gather, I don't think it's good, and I'm just wondering where it will lead as we move forward.
Okay. Yeah, and is what we're seeing there is a self-enrichment by the head of the IMF and her well, I guess they're bringing her to some sort of justice. I don't know what that's going to look like, but nonetheless, okay. And Deutsche Bank, we've been hearing for years, writes Robert, who's listening to us live here from the state of Washington. What is happening with Deutsche Bank, and should we be concerned, and why hasn't whatever was going to happen happened yet?
Well, I think we should be concerned. It's a very leveraged lending institution. It's the largest bank, as you know, in Germany. It has a lot of bad debt. Mm-hmm. German government has already stated, I think, quite equivocally and very clearly that they're not going to bail them out. The question is, if the bank gets in trouble and the German government doesn't bail them out, who will? Mm-hmm. You know, will it be the IMF? You know, will it be a consortium of banks come together to save Deutsche Bank? Who can say? But I think the risk as we move forward now, with interest rates certainly going up in the U.S., we could see a problem with the derivatives exposure that Deutsche Bank has.
Interesting. Which would be almost like a domino effect, wouldn't it, in a sense?
Well, we've already witnessed what this one rate hike has done to the bond market. As you know, Doug, we had a 35-year bull market in bonds. It's now over and done. We've seen the 10-year bond go from 1.4% to 2.6%, and it's going to continue to go higher. I think if the 10-year bond crosses the 3% threshold, we're going to see problems in the U.S. economy and all of our markets. I'm not predicting that will happen soon, but I think at some point it's a possibility. We can't rule it out.
Okay. All right. And in the remaining few minutes we have left here, here we are, just 10 days or so away from the end of the year, beginning of a new year.
Yes.
Any advice to the average American working person out there? What should the average person be doing, keeping their eye on? A very general question, of course, with, you know, just obviously, you know, where do you go with that question? But nonetheless, any words of wisdom for the average working person out there as we approach the end of
the year? Well, I think the key is not to overspend for the Christmas holiday season, and I think there's a tendency for us to do that. I think you want to evaluate and assess the risk that you're taking in your 401k, in your IRA account, in your overall exposure if you're retired in the stock and bond markets. I think you've got to prepare for volatility in these markets. I think we're going to see an increase in volatility in all of the markets, including gold, silver, and oil, as we get into early 2017. And the world, quite honestly, Doug, is a dangerous place. It's getting more dangerous by the day, and we live in a very violent society, and I don't think you can rule out anything. I think you've got to be prepared for some tough times if they certainly show themselves, and you have to put in place a plan to take care of your family and the people that are certainly part of what you're doing, and prepare for the worst and hope for the best.
Amen, brother. And those are always good words to live by. And in fact, I want to thank you for sharing that. And as we prepare to cut you loose to prepare for our other guests coming up at the 9 o'clock hour, I just want to say, first of all, thank you, number one, for all of your expertise, and thank you for agreeing to come on as, you know, frequently as you do to keep us updated on all of this. And one more time, sir, if you don't mind, tell people about your newsletter offer, which I think is a fantastic deal, and it's twice the price, but but tell people again. Say, I'm serious about that because I like it. I can read it. I understand it. But go ahead and tell people about your newsletter.
Anyone who becomes a subscriber from the Hagmann Report show and will extend the bonus offer on the subscription through the end of the year to give people plenty of time to take advantage of it, Doug. You'll get a full one-year subscription, a straight money analysis, normally $259.95 at the six-month subscription price, $149.95. You'll save $110 on a yearly subscription. I'll also include as a bonus the March, June, September, December 2016 issues of the newsletter. And we'll start your subscription for March 2017, and you'll get a full one-year subscription to the newsletter and four newsletters in 2017 as well.
Man, that's just a fantastic offer. Thank you for making that available to our listeners and our viewers.
Anybody has a question, they can always call and speak to me directly. But when you go to the Straight Money Analysis website, just click on the six-month button instead of the one-year subscription button. Put in under Merchant Instructions, Hagmann Report, and we'll know you're from the Doug Hagmann Show. And we'll go ahead once we get your order for the six-month subscription, and I'll personally make it a full one-year subscription to Straight Money Analysis.
Man, you are the man. Thank you, Joseph Meyer.
Thank you.
God bless you. Have a Merry Christmas, sir, you and your family, and stay safe, and we'll talk again. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, Doug. Always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience. Happy holidays to you and your family. Thank you.
Thank you. Folks, that was Joseph E. Meyer. Joseph Meyer, what a great man. What a great knowledge base. I mean, talk about just, you know, like, well, think about this. You know, before there was all kinds of confusion, and there still is relative confusion about the markets. And as we go, as we approach the end of the year, it seems like every single day, everything is becoming global, whether you like it or not. Let's just call it as it is. It's becoming global, and we're all interrelated, isn't it? Aren't we? And what happens in the drop of a stone in a pond, or the fluttering of the wing of a butterfly in France affects or causes a gale wind in New England, for example. I mean, things like this, I guess metaphorically speaking, but nonetheless, to understand, to begin to understand the economy, it's difficult. And it's not your father's economy anymore. Think about that. You know, the old saying, it's not your father's Oldsmobile. Well, it's not your father's economy. And, Mr. Meyer's been keeping up on all of this, and he's the go-to guy. I mean, John B. Wells has had him on, and Coast to Coast, and so many other places have really benefited from his expertise. We're just glad to have him, and I would stack his bona fides up against anyone else's. That's Joseph Meyer, and do take advantage of that newsletter offer. Coming up next hour is going to be, Pastor David Langford, trying to catch my swallow. I had sipping a purple stick, and that's good stuff. Visit healthmasters.com. By the way, Ted Brewer is going to be on to them tomorrow. Healthmasters.com. That's healthmasters.com. And make sure you stock up on your supplements and do it through healthmasters.com. You know, it's interesting because there were some internal documents released here in the minutes coming up to the end of the hour. There were some internal documents released. I want to touch on this that reveal this bizarre Facebook rules for censorship of hate speech. Have you seen this, folks? Facebook has really come under fire after the German magazine revealed the internal secrets. These secret rules of deletion that show the platform that flags the content and marks it as hate speech if it does not abide to this bizarre mathematical formula or set of formulas. Now, this German newspaper acquired this internal set of documents created by the department at Facebook that sets the rules of deletion. Now, these rules are often applied by external service providers. In other words, they're farmed out, okay? And employers attend internal training workshops where they learn what should be deleted and what shouldn't. Now, when you start looking at what is taking place here with the social feed, when you consider that 62% of Americans, and that's a hard number for me to even comprehend, 62% of Americans get their news from social media. Folks, I don't live on the internet, and I don't think any one of us should. And I certainly don't get my news from Facebook. Now, you follow trends, for example, on Twitter, but you don't get your news necessarily from Twitter. You follow the information trail, and then you do your own research, but you don't rely on something posted on a social networking site. But anyway, I digress. But the documents show that Facebook, they're trying to fight this hate speech on their platform. And this is percolating in Europe, but it's coming toward the United States. And they've coined protected categories that help define when hate speech is hateful. So, you see, we have to be told when hate speech is hateful. You don't want to know what this is. I mean, you don't. Look, any type of criticism based on sex, religion, nationality, gender identity, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or disability is going to be flagged as hate speech and deleted. Now, despite Facebook taking this an active stance in combating hate speech, you notice that it allows some forms of hate speech. There are subcategories that enjoy some protection. Age, for example, employment status, continent of origin, social status, appearance. I was trying to think of a good way to... Eric, do you have a good... No, never mind. I was trying to think of something I could insert there with respect to appearance that is edgy, but not but that would pass the censors. But I can't. Political affiliation and religion. So here's the thing. All right, if while Facebook will not allow, for example, someone to talk about the sexual orientation or gender identity, if someone wants to identify, for example, not as a man or a woman, but as a half man, half woman, or whatever craziness might exist there, that is protected. You cannot criticize. However, the subcategory that Facebook won't touch is political affiliation. So if you say that all Trump followers, for example, are moronic, idiot, knuckle-dragging, misogynist, sexist, racist, homophobe, xenophobes, you're okay. You can do that. You see where this is going? The censorship is just incredible. And there's a couple of examples given. For example, writing Irish women are dumb. Now, this is from an article in Heat Street. Now I'm moving to an article in Heat Street, which includes both national origins and sex categories. That breaks the community guidelines, meaning such a post would be deleted. But saying Irish teenagers are dumb won't break the community rules, because a combination of protected category and unprotected category results in, it defaults to a non-censorship issue. You see the mechanics behind this? There is a method to this madness, and it's not good. All right. You can write, for example, effing Muslims, and the censorship, the issue is not with your effing, but with the mention of Muslims. Oh, goodness. You just can't make this stuff up. For some sane spiritual nourishment, Pastor Langford coming right up.